Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
When you cease life-saving measures at a scene where someone's been shot and is now deceased at the scene, do you leave sort of any attached medical devices with him?
Well, as little as possible. So what would have been left on him would have been defibrillator pads, probably EKG electrodes, and probably a CPR puck.
Okay. Now, when you arrived on scene or when you were exiting, did you ever notice any mail outside that might have been with some police officers?
Oh, a person?
Yeah.
Yes. One male.
And did you notice him when you arrived or when you left?
Well, when I arrived, my job in particular is to kind of get a larger overview of the scene. So I did notice a person talking with PD.
And when you observed this person, did you notice anything that he appeared to be injured in any way?
No.
So no obvious injuries to you?
No.
If you had been asked to treat him, would you have?
Of course.
Did you see that same person outside when you left?
Yes.
And when you left, did you observe anything about him again that he appeared to be injured in any way?
No.
Did you ever see a female and a female teenager at the scene?
Yes.
Where did you see them?
They were across the street from the house we were at.
Do you see that person in the courtroom today?
I see the adult, yes.
Can you point her out and let us know what she's wearing?
Dark blazer at the defendant's table. Dark clothes, I'm not sure.
Okay. State will ask the record to reflect the witnesses identified the defendant.
Mitchell.
Did you overhear her talking or saying anything?
I did overhear her talking with the police officers, or someone said something about not getting invited to a pool party because of the commotion at the house or something. So
what? Did you have any formal interaction with her?
No.
When you sort of completed and left this scene, looking back and assessing it, based upon your training, your experience, what you observed, and what was done to Mr. Vallow at the scene, would you agree that Charles Vallow was dead before you entered the house?
Yes.
Based upon your training, your experience, what you observed and what was done to Mr. Vallow, would you agree that it was highly unlikely that anyone had performed CPR on Charles Vallow prior to fire arriving?
Yes.
I have no other questions, Your Honor.
All right, cross.
Captain Keller.
Yes.
You were first on the scene?
The police department was first, but yes, we were the first fire unit.
First fire on the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And can you explain to us what staging is exactly? I'm not really sure.
Sure. Staging, when there is some violent incident, the fire department, the firefighters don't have protective equipment for that sort of a scene. So we will go to a place where close to whatever the dispatched address is, that we would be a place of safety, but close so that as soon as the scene is made safe by the police department, then we would enter into the scene.
So that would be like a couple houses away, or?
Could be a couple houses, could be behind cover. In this case, it was a gunshot was the call. So you want to make sure that you are a little ways away, you know.
Okay.
In case there was more gunshots.
Right. So you parked somewhere on the street, but a couple houses down from the house. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then part of that staging is you stay there until you get the all clear?
Yes, until the police department says that it's safe to enter the scene.
Okay. And you were wearing body cam that day?
No, we don't wear body
cam. Oh, you don't wear body cam. Okay. You were just on the, that was a picture from you on the body cam?
On
someone
the
else's
officers.
Body
yes.
cam. Okay. Okay. Do you use any instruments to obtain current body temperature? Do you
No.
guys have an instrument for that?
No.
No? Would that help you give a more approximate time of calling a time of death?
It wouldn't help me. I'm not trained to do that. So we don't have that. It's not within our scope of practice to determine that.
It's not part of paramedics training?
No.
Okay. You explained the modeling being patchy-looking skin?
Yes.
Because of no oxygen to the skin. Is that correct?
Decreased, yes.
And so will that continue to increase? I don't really understand. Like, would you say modeling is complete or in progress? How does that work?
I would say in progress. As less and less tissue had oxygenation, I would say it continues to model.
So would you say it was in early progress or late progress? How would you estimate that?
I could not say early or late, just modeling.
Modeling was present?
Yes, yes.
At that point. So how long would it take for modeling to become present? That's kind of my question.
I don't know how long.
So it could be
different for different people, I suppose.
So it could be a minute? 5 minutes?
Yeah, he's already indicated.
Hold on. Rephrase the question. I'll allow it, but make sure you let him answer before you ask your next question.
Okay. So it could be just a few minutes, possibly?
Possibly. I don't know.
Okay. And then lividity, you explained as a pooling of blood. The blood leaves the tissues and goes to the bottom. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And you saw that as well?
Yes.
And in your estimation, would that have happened soon? You know what I'm... Oh, that's not a good question. In your estimation, that had begun?
Yes.
And was it advancing how far?
He had lividity on the back of his torso.
So does lividity...
Backs of his arms.
Does lividity start immediately after the heart stops? Is that what you were saying?
I suppose it does.
Okay. And if you were on any kind of medication, would that affect that as well?
I couldn't say.
And what time of death did you document? You were making the document, is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And what time of death did you document?
I did not put time of death, but I put a time of treatment being ceased, and I don't recall what that time was. It's on that report.
And you had stated that you were listening to dispatch on the radio, is that correct?
Yes.
So were you listening to the actual 911 operator speaking?
No. Whoever is calling, if you call on the phone to a 911 operator, they would give that information to a dispatcher who would then dispatch a call with the pertinent information.
Okay. So you were getting kind of updates as it went along?
No, you get the initial call, and then if it were pertinent for us, like the scene is secure, PD says the scene is secure, go in, then we would get that. PD would call dispatch, and dispatch would then call us.
Okay, so were you aware at all that they had asked him to come outside?
No.
Okay. You just saw that he was outside, but you didn't know that the 911 operator had told him to come outside. Is that correct?
I did not know who he was or how he was involved in it.
Okay.
When we arrived.
So on those dispatch updates, it wasn't saying like shooter is in-house or shooter is outside or anything like that. Okay. That wouldn't be.
Not to us.
That's what I'm saying.
That might be to the police department, but that's not something we would hear.
Okay. In this case, Captain Keller, do you know for a fact that CPR had not been given?
I do not know for a fact.
And do you know for a fact that CPR had been given?
I know for a fact that we gave CPR.
Prior to your coming in?
No.
No further questions.
All right, redirect.
Which do you see first, modeling or lividity? When the heart stops and the blood is no longer pumped?
Modeling.
Okay.
I would expect to see modeling first.
And you told us, I think on direct, that lividity is something that you see much later.
Yes. I would expect that, yes.
Have you treated patients before within a few minutes of their heart stopping?
Yes.
Do you see lividity in those people?
No.
Do you see modeling in those people?
No. You see skin conditions change in those people, gray or cooling, moist, moisture, but not modeling or lividity.
So, you're not here to tell us how long it takes for those to form, right?
I don't know.
All you can tell us is that it's something that you see in patients who are deceased?
Yes.
And have been deceased long enough, whatever time period that is, for that to happen.
Right. It is an indication of the patient no longer being a viable patient.
And that was one of the things that you noted and used in determining to end any life-saving measures?
Yes.
Now, is the only way to know if CPR has been given to be there with the person watching them?
No.
What else can tell you that CPR was given to a patient?
Well, PD on scene arriving would witness, the best way would be witness CPR.
That's the best way. Is there any other ways?
Well, yes. Again, you would have an indentation in the chest. The sternum would likely be have been cracked loose from the rib cage. And there would be, in the case of trauma, increased bleeding. You do CPR or CCR sometimes when there's not trauma, cardiac.
In this case, were other indicators the blood that was pooling only at the neck and not spread out further?
Yes.
The lack of pooling underneath the victim?
Yes, and the mechanical action of decompressions with a gunshot wound right there would have spread blood in that area as well. It wouldn't just have gone where gravity is.
So where you saw is where you saw the blood pooling was where gravity, a low spot.
That was my interpretation of it, yes.
And you did not observe spread blood across his chest?
No.
Would ongoing CPR movement of the blood through the body have also limited the modeling you may have seen?
Perhaps.
Ultimately, is it your opinion that it is unlikely that CPR was given to this patient prior to fire arriving?
Yes.
Thank you. I have no other questions.
Are there any juror questions? I see at least one coming down. Please pass those down. Put on the white noise first. All right. We have some juror questions for you. Was there any attempt to gain venous access to administer medications to aid the heart in functioning, i.e. ephedrine? If no, why not?
It's not indicated for trauma. It doesn't, if there's no blood to pump or the heart has stopped pumping, increasing how fast the heart pumps with ephedrine would do nothing. So in trauma, it is not indicated.
Was ACLS protocol followed?
Yes.
Was there a physician patched in?
No, there's no patch required for cessation of treatment. It is part of our ability and part of our training to determine non-viability.
Are fire department personnel allowed to call a patient's death?
Yes. However, time of death is a different thing. If that's what you're asking. In other words, we are allowed to stop attempting to do life-saving treatment if it's merely a recovery. So does that answer?
Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to have the defense. First of all, let me check. Are there any other juror questions for this witness? I don't see any. The defense can follow up based on those questions if you want.
No questions, Your Honor.
All right. How about the state?
Just a couple.
Sir, when would you use ephedrine?
Well, if you had just a systole, but it was a cardiac-based code, if the heart had stopped due to some disease state, electric shock, for instance, you would use epi. Are you saying epinephrine is what you're saying, right?
So when you're looking at whether or not to push drugs to try to get the heart to restart, you're looking at the type of trauma that caused the heart to stop.
And how long it's been since the heart stopped.
So in a place where you said there is trauma, meaning like a gunshot wound?
Like a hole in the vessel, yes.
So that is treated differently than if someone has a heart attack and...
Yes. Yes.
You were asked about...
These are all algorithms, protocols that are given for us to operate on scenes under medical control to whoever asked about the patch.
What is then the ACLS protocol?
Advanced cardiac life support. And it's just, again, it's a flow chart. Are there obvious signs of death? Yes. Stop CPR.
So here, you followed that protocol and stopped CPR.
Yes, ma'am. CCR, technically, but yes.
You were asked about contacting a physician, a patch or something, for a cessation of treatment.
Right.
Are there times where you... Do you patch in with a physician?
Sure, you would patch en route, not for a code. You would patch en route and give a doctor, or actually it would be a nurse answering the phone. But you would let them know what you have and what treatment you have given and what treatment you are going to give en route to their facility to continue care. We are primarily to stabilize and turn over the patient, making it more viable for a rescue.
So when you terminate treatment because a patient is not viable, you cannot revive them, you don't need to talk to a doctor about that?
No, you need to call in that you did it. So there would have been a patch after that, but you don't have to call in to cease treatment.
So you don't need a blessing by a doctor to stop life-saving treatment?
Well, no, we have the blessing through our certifications and through our training. So we are operating under a doctor's license at any time we are operating. So that doctor or this group of doctors usually understands our training level and agrees to trains us to make that decision, yes.
And so ultimately, as a paramedic, you have the authority to use that protocol to determine when you are no longer able to revive or save the life of a patient.
Cease life-saving functions, yes.
And that's what you did here?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. I have no other questions.
All right. You can step down. We're going to take our lunch recess. I'll remind the jury of the admonition. We will resume at 1:30 p.m.
All rise for the jury.
Coming in because it's so late.
In reading that affidavit, I would agree with you that was my initial thought as well. But the problem that we have here is that software was available and those things were available and they were not handed over from the state. They were never handed over from the state and they've had that information for years. So that's why we filed that motion is because of our expert was able to download the one device that we got that he was able to see that the complete downloads were never given, that these are reports of downloads when we know that the state had available the entire complete extraction in the first place. They just didn't give us the entire extraction. They gave us the reports of the extractions, the ones that they wanted us to have. So those were available according to the technology. They just didn't give them to us on all of the devices, but we only have proof of it on one device because that's the only device that we were able to do in a timely manner.
All right. I want to clarify a little bit. They gave you the full extraction that was available to them at the time.
No, they pulled a report from the full extraction and gave us that. That's what they gave us.
State, want to respond?
Your Honor, when you extract data from a device like a cell phone, it is put into a formula where it is not readable by anyone, which is why then you use the Cellbrite technology to basically parse that data into areas that we can read and view and review.
Is that what was given to the defense?
That is what was given to the defense, was the 2019 or 2020 version of the Cellbrite technology that was used to take that extraction and put it into a readable form so that you can look at, for instance, not having to search through all this data to try to find out a text message. All of them are put together with dates and times and people and locations.
Your Honor, I would request that we can have a hearing on this so that I can bring in Lonnie Dworkin and he can explain that what they did not give us.
Well, just reading his affidavit, is what they gave you is what they had available to them at the time. There's no affirmative duty for them to, every time a new software version comes out that makes maybe more data available, to rerun all the information.
We're not claiming that it is. We're claiming that they had a full extraction and they gave us a report of that full extraction instead of the full extraction on all the devices. It's not what only was available to them. They did have that available, they just didn't give it to us. It's cherry picking. It's okay. Cherry picking is what we got.
I don't read your own expert's affidavit the same way you're reading it, but
that's why I'd like him to be able to come in and explain it. Can we set that up?
Well, we can set that up at some point, but again, this is all late, and it's unlikely that anything that's happening would lead to him being allowed to testify, but maybe we'll do that this Friday or something. I don't know. We'll have to squeeze it in, but I'm not going to make the jury wait to do that.
Okay.
We'll be at recess until 1:30.
Judge, we do need to raise one issue. I was advised that juror, I believe, 15 was looking at his cell phone during the testimony of the previous witness. I don't know if it was coincidence, but right after that, he put a question into the question box. We did have a very detailed medical questions for Captain Keller.
Is that the gentleman with the white hair and the glasses?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I wanted to see if we could ensure that there isn't any additional investigation going on.
Let's bring juror 15 in.
An expert or non-expert?
Are you calling him next?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Last week on Monday, asked you if you were objecting to him as an expert as much as late disclosure, and your, at that time, was that it was late disclosure, that the case had been pending for four or five years, and that you felt that his disclosure a month approximately before trial was late. I then said I would go back and look at the state's 15.1 supplemental disclosure statement about his testimony. And it appears from the avowal made in that statement that he has relevant information that could assist the jury in making a determination. Do you want to be heard on that?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I feel like it was the state just putting him on as an expert so that he can give his opinion. I wasn't objecting to him as a detective and someone who's been there on the case or as the scene agent, but he went from scene agent to expert so that he can give his opinion. And I don't think it is relevant that he can give his opinion at this time. We weren't allowed to have enough time to get someone to rebut his professional opinion.
based on his training and experience, he was going to make an opinion about one of the gunshots being fired, possibly from the victim laying in a prone position.
As a firearms expert, and we haven't had a CV on how he's a firearms expert.
There was information on his training and experience contained within that 15.1 statement. I think additionally, questions about whether or not the extent of his training, the extent of his experience would probably go more toward the weight that the jury should give it rather than the credibility. Rather than the admissibility of it. You're free to cross-examine him on his training experience or lack thereof. But at this time, I was inclined to allow him to testify. I'm hesitant to use the term as a full expert, but he has training and experience that could assist the jury in making a determination one way or the other based on that. So,
and he can't do that just as the scene expert or as the detective that was there?
Well, I think he could, based on his training and experience, do that. I'm hesitant to call him an expert per se in the sense of a scientific type expert with scientific type testing, which requires more foundational evidence on someone's expertise. This type of testimony, I think, is testimony that a lot of people that have experience with guns could have an opinion on. Again, you can cross-examine him on his knowledge, his training, his experience, etc.
But will it be given to the jury that he is an expert in firearms? Yes or no?
I don't know. I guess I'll have to see how the testimony, what kind of foundation is laid for that by the state. All right. Anything the state want to supplement your argument or your 15.1 motion?
Your Honor, no. The defense was able to interview Dan Kuhns on March 21st of 2025, so after that was noticed, so they were given the opportunity to question him regarding any of his expertise or not. And really, the state filed that in an abundance of caution. I think that he, a normal scene agent with sufficient information and knowledge and training, might be able to discuss trajectory, but we wanted to make it clear that he did have that sufficient background, training, and expertise to do that.
Are you planning on eliciting testimony that an opinion as to which shot was first as opposed to which shot was second?
Only in that he did attend the autopsy, so he does also understand both that information, the shored wound, which goes into play in his determination of the trajectory, as well as that the other shot went through the victim's heart. He can say that what he believes the trajectory for each shot is, I guess, if someone wants to argue that he was shot in the heart first, or laying on the ground first and then got up and was shot a second time through the heart, that I don't think that he has that expertise to say that perhaps someone couldn't do that.
Well, I think the point I'm getting at is no one observed it that is going to testify to the shooting, as far as I know so far. And that I don't even think your medical expert could definitively say this was shot one and this was shot two. So that's fair cross-examination. But other than that, I'm going to allow his testimony. If you have a foundational objection or any other sort of hearsay objection or evidentiary objection, you can make it depending on what the question is.
Okay. I don't really understand how the trajectory is relevant to conspiracy, so I would like to make that objection. We're stipulating that there was two shots.
Okay.
Your Honor, just for the record, it's because the defense has noticed self-defense.
Right. All right. Let's bring the jury in. Yeah, why don't you do that? Hey, I was meant to ask Trey how to move that. Hey, will you move this podium back? Because we're not going to need it until closing argument. Move this back over there before we bring it.
Thank you. I may go get
All right, sir, come on up. You're going to stand right here and be sworn in.
Mm-hmm. Can you sign your name for
the record?
Yeah. I do solemnly swear that this one you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
All right, so, sir, go ahead and come around here. Have a seat to my left.
Sir, would you please introduce yourself to the jury?
My name is Daniel Coons.
And where do you work now?
Well, I am part-time temporary employed with the City of Chandler Police Department as a civilian criminal investigator for cold cases.
Where did you work before that?
Before that, I finished working as a detective with the Chandler Police Department. Specifically, the last assignment was the robbery homicide unit.
How long did you work for the Chandler Police Department?
Just over 30 years.
Can you walk us through your different assignments at Chandler Police Department?
Sure. After my basic training at the academy, I was assigned to patrol. I did that for a little bit. And while I was in patrol, I was assigned as a crime scene officer. Now, that's still a patrol officer, but it's additional duties such as collecting evidence, processing crime scenes, taking photographs, things along those lines. After I did that, I went to crime prevention for a couple years. I did that and came back to patrol, found a calling to go into detectives. I became a family crimes detective for 5 years. And from there, I became a homicide detective. During that time, I was also assigned part-time. We don't have a full-time SWAT team, so I was on that for just about 20 years.
Can you talk to us a little bit about your training to become a SWAT officer and what a SWAT officer does?
So there are many jobs within SWAT. There's regular officers that typically will do entry. There's some that specialize in breaching, some specialize in grenadiers, and then we also have the snipers. So I was cross-trained to do the regular basic entry officer stuff, as well as I became a sniper, and eventually I became a sniper instructor.
Okay, so what kind of training did you have to go through to become a sniper and sniper instructor?
So the sniper training was a basic 40-hour course. I attended that with the FBI. And as time progressed, I would attend advanced sniper trainings so that I could enhance my skill set. And eventually, after having been on as a sniper for a while, I attended a 40-hour sniper instructor course.
Who is that with?
That was with the American Sniper Association.
As a trainer for snipers, what did that entail?
It entailed having to have a good working knowledge of the actual job. the ballistics that the rifles need to perform, knowing how to train new snipers, knowing how to keep snipers that have achieved certification to keep their skill sets up, and to keep meeting the mandates of what would be expected of a police sniper.
Did you ever become a shooting reconstruction expert?
I did.
Can you tell us what does that mean?
It means that I attended a course. It was a 40-hour course where it was completely hands-on. There was classroom, a lot of hands-on with you not only see the results of different impacts and things like that, but you watch it happen, and then in some cases you actually get to make it happen. And then after that, you, as a class, you work together, putting things back together. And at the end of the 40 weeks, there is a test that you have to pass to get certification.
You said 40 weeks?
Oh, sorry, 40 hours, sorry.
So what does, I guess, shooting reconstruction mean, if you had to explain that to us?
It means being able to take information from a scene and being able to put it together to reconstruct as best as possible or humanly possible what happened. For instance, you have bullet strikes. In some cases, you can actually get a good angle or ballistics information so that you can backtrack it and get an approximate area where the shooter had to have been. In many cases, you can help articulate whether information given to you was factual or if the information given to you was not. And this is very handy when there are no witnesses and you only have basically the person saying what happened.
Is there any type of certification process to be a shooting reconstruction expert?
Yes. At the end of that course, I had to successfully complete a test in order to get certification.
And when did that occur?
That was in, I believe, early 2017.
Who is that through? Who puts that on?
It was with Michael Haig, his company.
Who is Michael Haig?
He is part of a duo, father-son duo, that have become quite renowned for their ability to do ballistics and then teach it and train other people with it.
Okay. And have you utilized those skills that you learned in that shooting reconstruction course as a detective since then?
Yes, many times.
I assume you passed the certification test?
I did.
Okay. So on July 11th of 2019, were you working as a detective at that time for the homicide unit at the Chandler Police Department?
Yes, I was.
During the weekdays, what were your, I guess, work hours normally?
My normal work hours were Monday through Thursday, about 7 to 5.
When you are working as a detective, we've heard a patrol is out driving around. What are you guys doing?
Well, we carry a caseload. So many times we are working on the cases that we've taken previous days or weeks ahead of time. We're trying to come to a conclusion for those particular cases. But many times we also will have our radios on, just kind of listening to what's going on.
So are you at the, like your office is at the main police station?
Correct.
Okay. On July 11th of 2019, did you hear some police radio traffic of a shooting at 5531 South Fort Peaks Place?
Yes, I did.
Did you respond to the scene?
After collecting some equipment and putting it in my vehicle, yes.
Is that normal then for detectives with homicide to go out to the scenes?
For the unit at the time, yes, it was.
Can you describe for us what the scene looked like when you arrived?
There were police vehicles around. There were officers that had established a perimeter. Some crime scene tape was already put in place. And they basically had frozen the scene.
Do you recall about how far away the scene was from the station where you were located?
15, 20-minute drive.
When you arrived there, were other detectives arriving? How does that work?
There were several of us that had self-deployed, and we were in various stages of being on our way there. So other detectives did arrive.
How do you decide which detective is going to do what at a scene when you all just show up there?
Well, a lot of times it's just a matter of who speaks up first saying, I'm going to take case. If it's after hours, then the person that's on call will usually be the person to do it. But if it's during regular business hours, it's kind of like a little wrestling match to figure out who's going to end up taking it.
What role did you get?
I got assigned the scene.
Okay. What does that mean to be assigned scene?
So the scene work, assigned scene, means that you're responsible for making sure that the scene is processed properly, accumulate whatever evidence is necessary, report back to the actual case agent your findings so that they can stay aware of how things are transitioning and being learned, and then they can start making informed decisions on what the next step is going to be.
Do you do that alone or do you have help?
It depends on the scene. In this particular case, there I had Detective Duncan along with me.
And do you have any, does Chandler Police Department have any like crime scene specialists or people that come up to help as well?
Yes. When I left the crime scene officer program, they had actually started a civilian program so that they could free up the officer's responsibility. So Chandler has several crime scene techs that will respond out when called.
And was someone called out to that scene?
Yes.
Were you, do you sort of, as the scene agent, help, I guess, tell them what to do? Are you the person who's overseeing the whole scene?
It's more of a collaborative effort. We do provide direction on things that we're specifically interested in, but I've worked with them for many years, so it's pretty easy for us to just understand some of the basics that have to be done, such as overall photographs. Before we even think about manipulating anything or marking anything, we want to try to capture the scene as it was that we walked into it.
As the scene agent, did you create a diagram to just reflect what the scene looked like?
Yes.
And is that to scale?
It's not to scale. It's close, but it's not to scale.
Your Honor, if I can have my paralegal approach with Exhibit 5. And I think there's a second page in there.
It is behind, but it's not exposed to the back. Yes.
And is that the sketch and then the second page measurements of that diagram that you made?
Yes.
Your Honor, the state will move to admit Exhibit 5.
Any objection?
If it's not to scale, I don't know how it will be helpful, but no objection.
All right, Exhibit 5 is admitted.
And if I may publish.
Go ahead.
We might use the one behind you.
All right.
Can I have the detective? Oh, never mind. There you go. Okay, so this is Exhibit 5, the first page. Mm-hmm. Is this sort of an overview of the entire residence as well as the items of evidence that you collected?
That is correct.
So we understand where we see these little yellow placards. What do those indicate on your diagram?
On this diagram, they indicate the items of evidence for that particular room.
And do they each have a number associated with them?
Yes.
And is the second page of your diagram a reflection of what each of those numbers refers to?
Yes, it is.
We see in this A, B, and distances. What is that?
So the reference points for this particular purpose, we did a triangulation method. So we take measurements from two known points in that room, and then we measure out to the item of interest. And then that was how we get a point A and a point B measurement.
All right, so at the first page here, that's the actual diagram. What is the reference points that you are using to make these distance measurements?
So the reference points are not depicted on this diagram, but in this particular room, if you look at the wall where items number 2 and 12 are, the upper or the left upper corner is B, and if you go straight down towards the kitchen area, that along that wall, that corner is A.
Okay. So when we see a reference measurement from A of 21 feet to the bat, we're talking 21 feet this way should be where the bat was?
No, you're talking 21 feet from that corner, straight line to the bat.
Okay. So whatever the closest measurement or closest way to get there would be?
Correct.
So for the bat, it would be something like that?
Correct.
And then when we see reference point B for the bat, then you're talking from this point to the bat?
Correct.
Okay, just so we understand that. When Chandler Police Department goes to a scene like this, do they utilize any type of photography system to help better document a scene so that you can see things more clearly sometimes than with photographs alone?
Yes, depending on the scene, we would use a system called the Lizard Q.
What is Lizard Q?
It's, in essence, a 360-degree photographic system that you set up on a tripod inside or wherever your location is, inside, outside, and you start the process, and the internal computer for this system specifically takes a set number of pictures where it's overexposed all the way to underexposed and the images in between, and it does this at various locations along the path to create enough overlapping images, and then those images are stitched together and actually create a 360-degree sphere of the scene.
Did you have to get trained on how to use Lizard Q?
There was some training involved, yes.
If, again, my paralegal can approach with Exhibit 139, you can take a look at that.
Okay.
You recognize a thumb drive that is in Exhibit 139?
Yes.
What is on that thumb drive?
On this thumb drive will be the Lizard Q spheres.
Okay. And is there a reader on there so that you can actually view it?
Correct.
There's a piece of paper in there as well. What is that?
The piece of paper is a set of instructions on how to use the Lizard Q viewer so that you can view the spheres.
And did you initial the thumb drive to indicate that you had viewed it and you recognized that as the Lizard Q that you created on July 11th of 2019?
I have
Or did you actually create that?
I created the thumb drive.
And that's your thumb drive that you put it onto?
Yes.
All right. State will move to admit Exhibit 139.
Any objection?
No objection, Your Honor.
139 submitted.
Judge, at this point, might I ask the witness to come down here to utilize the lizard cue? I can sit at the table, but it needs to be put into a computer to do that, and I don't think we can hook it up there. So if you can insert that on the laptop. Yeah, thank you. Sure, I might have to log in. I just might have to log into my computer, sorry. Oh, no, it's still like. You from there. All right. Can you talk us through? So you've opened the thumb drive to where that's at. How do you get to viewing this program?
So first, you'll have to double click on.
Hold on one sec. I'm sorry. We're waiting for it to. Yes, the USB is in that laptop up there on the podium. There. Okay. Yeah.
So first you need to double click on the lizardcue viewer.exe so it can open it up. And then it's going to ask you where to look for the spheres. That's going to be. And then you just double click on the sphere you choose to open up, and it will open it up for you.
And can you make that larger so we can?
I'm waiting for it to respond.
Got it. Okay.
So once you have the sphere open, you want me to just.
Yeah, if you can. Just tell us how to work that first, and then we'll ask a few questions.
So once you have the sphere open, if you depress the left mouse button, you can actually move the images around. Without depressing the mouse button, you can zoom in and you can zoom out with the scrolling wheel. If you depress the right mouse button and use the scrolling wheel, this will darken or lighten your sphere. It will give you the ability to look outside as opposed to just the photographs washing it out normally so you can see inside. With this particular program, you can open up multiple windows, but you'll really only be able to view one at a time, but you can go back and forth between them.
So for this sphere that we're looking at, we see Charles Vallow there, correct?
Yes.
And then there's some white cards that we see around the room. What are those?
Those are 3x5 cards that officers have dropped in the scene. A lot of times they'll do that to help identify to detectives items that they observed, and to be a warning to other officers to watch out for these items as you're either moving through or exiting the scene.
Is the Lizard Cue program then used prior to the scene being documented and, let me say this. We saw in your diagram, Exhibit 5, that there were little yellow placards or numbered items. Is that something that's actually done in the scene? So we were looking at the bat, for instance.
Correct. So in this particular moment in time, we just merely left it with the placards there. Again, it was attempting to capture the scene as we as an investigative unit found it. There can be times that we'll do this first and eventually go through putting evidence placards down and then maybe do another sphere showing all the evidence placards.
Okay. So would it be fair to say that this is done to document the scene prior to police going through and having maybe digging through areas to find potential evidence?
Right. It's much like when we do overall photographs with the 35mm camera. This is just another enhancement of that.
For this room where we see Mr. Vallo, do we have two different spheres?
Yes. In this particular room, I did a lower sphere, and then I raised it on the tripod that you can see in it to another height, and then I did a sphere there. So we have a program that we can combine those and make it a measurement sphere. So we could do measurements linear, not to and from the camera because of its limitations.
So what is provided here is without measurements?
That is correct.
Okay. And without anything being marked yet?
Aside from the 3x5 parts.
Okay. Can you show us the lower level sphere as well?
This is the lower level.
Okay, then the upper level one, sorry.
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.